This is Chris.
And this is Chris.
And we's talking we's to thee. Hey, gals and guys, welcome to another episode of We's Talking We's to Thee, where we may be tired of Weezer.
So we're talking about all music that is not Weezer today.
That's our new theme for today's episode, at least.
Yes.
So yeah, you heard right. Today we should title the episode We's Talking Post-We's to Thee, because we are discussing our top five favorite bands that have happened since the release of Blue.
That have happened. That's a funny way to put it, actually. Like, I was in a band that happened.
Yeah, exactly. Some of these bands very much could have happened.
They totally occurred.
Exactly.
Yeah, this will be our best artist since Blue.
Exactly.
Episode.
Yeah, that was kind of the mental exercise that we were going for.
Yeah.
And boy, was it kind of tough.
Yeah, but fun.
Oh, so fun. This is some of the most fun that I've had prepping for one of our shows.
Cool.
Which is so sad and hopefully not disheartening to our Weezer fan fellows. You know, we are still Weezer fans by
all means. Oh, big time.
But
bigger than ever, truly.
But, exactly. But after 12 episodes digging so deep into one band, boy, is it refreshing to take that same attitude and approach and break down bands that we absolutely love equally as much, if not more so. So it's just kind of, that was really, really fun for me. I would assume you kind of feel the same, Chris.
Yeah, for sure. And fear not, we are going to find a way, tenuous or not, to relate these bands that we're going to talk about to the music of Weezer some
exactly.
way or another.
That's the whole point, right? Why would you listen to a Weezer podcast when the two dudes are talking about 10 groups? That's not Weezer.
Guys, you ain't talking Weeze to me.
I put on the podcast and I was so confused. They didn't talk about Weezer one time.
But, you know, we just dropped 6.5 hours on Pinkerton and Blue and 15 episodes on one band. So we thought, high time to kind of do a little palate cleanser, get a breath of fresh air, take a different approach to preparing for these episodes,
mm-hmm.
and a different approach to presenting these episodes. And hey, who knows? Maybe you're going to hear music today that you also love, and hopefully you're going to hear music today that you don't know, and it turns out you love.
Exactly.
That would be a wonderful outcome here. And we'd be curious maybe to hear your favorite music that has come out since May 10th, 1994.
Absolutely. And that leads us perfectly into getting into a little fan mail.
New segment. That's right. Yeah. We also wanted to kind of do some housekeeping because we've been getting some tremendous messages and outreach via email, on Twitter, on Instagram. And we just wanted to highlight some of our favorites because we love, here's the thing. I never thought for a moment that we would ever have listeners from across the world writing to us about our show, the work we're doing, and the music that we love.
True.
So much. So it's kind of just like all bonus. But at a point, it was like, this is great stuff. Like, I love reading this stuff, you know, and I know Chris does too.
Oh yeah, it's super exciting to hear other people share our viewpoints and argue with us and
share their viewpoints.
Exactly. Yeah. Whether it's a different view from us or whatever, it's the best. I love hearing from you guys. So keep
right.
it up.
Let's get started with Tanner from Utah, who sent us a lovely email with some unlikely but incredibly sincere love for the much maligned Pacific Daydream.
Yeah, about the album, he wrote to us and said, I loved River's expertly written lyrics and melodies, the sad, happy themes, the expert production and instrumentation. To this day, it is my favorite album from any artist, and it solidified Weezer as my favorite band.
That's a unique path.
I know.
And that's
Your
cool.
Your first way to Weezer is through Pacific Daydream? What a fantastic little way to stumble into that band. Such a bizarre way to stumble into
it
that
is,
band.
But that's kind of what happens. That's kind of a byproduct of a band that's been around for 25 years.
Yeah.
And who kind of consistently appeals to a certain type of listener and a certain age of listener. I'm actually not sure how old Tanner is. I know he's younger than I am, and maybe he's around the age of Chris the Younger here. I'm not positive. But he does go on. He had some really good thoughts about this record.
Exactly. He said, out of curiosity, I looked up a bunch of critical reviews for Pacific Daydream and was stunned to read negative review after negative review on so many different websites. People were intensely offended by the beach pop style of the album, and they quickly dismissed it with very low scores, saying it was, quote, their worst since Ratitude. And we'd like to add a quick editor's note. That's wrong, because Hurley is Weezer's worst record since Ratitude.
That's right.
With a bullet.
It turns out. Tanner continues, I kept fishing for positive reviews, trying to validate my thorough adoration of the album. I kept showing the songs from the album to anybody I could, and people seemed to like it in person. But still, all the Weezer critics burnt it to the ground and spit on its ashes. Well put, my man.
Yeah, for real.
I found your podcast through your High as a Kite tutorial/analysis video. Thank you for watching, my friend. and was interested to see that your first episode was a breakdown of my favorite album, Pacific Daydream. And I have to say, I was so relieved to hear you guys say good things about the songs. Heck, you guys praised it and kept referencing it through the other episodes of your podcast. It was a breath of fresh air to hear you guys give your thorough opinion and take a little closer look than, oh no, it's all pop and we hate pop.
Exactly. We're super happy to hear you say that, man, because...
That's a big part of the show.
Exactly.
That's a big point of this show.
Right.
Is
exactly.
Hearing the music for what it is. Whether exactly. that's good or bad, but sometimes it's surprisingly good and sometimes it's disappointingly bad.
Yeah, which was really kind of him to even add, I've enjoyed your perspectives as musicians, songwriters, and Weezer fans, and I've listened to you review each album. I think you do what everyone should. Listen to Weezer songs more than one or two times before dismissing them. As a musician and sort of songwriter,
I like to dismiss them after like six listens, personally.
Yeah, minimum.
Minimum six. Maximum seven.
But he just wanted to basically say that he really appreciates our chord breakdowns, lyrical analysis, and everything that we do on the show. And after receiving this very thoughtful email, we inquired as to his personal Black Album and Heart song selections for Pacific Daydream, to which he responded with another wonderful email. In short, his Black Album selection is Mexican Fender, and his three Heart songs are 3, QB Blitz, 2, Get Right, and 1, Our Beloved Weekend Woman. I wonder if he chose that because of us, I don't know.
I think he chose it because it's great.
Well, yeah, it's really the true standout, of course. And I must say, his analysis of the lyrics in particular was quite compelling. Thank you, Tanner from Utah, for the great conversation, sir.
Yeah, and over on Instagram, at BDPFAU, what, I don't know how you say it, BDPFAU, he inquired as to what guitar and amp I use when I play my little musical examples here on the show. And of course, I responded to his message personally, but I may as well say here, in case anyone else is curious, that it's a Cordoba electric acoustic classical guitar, a C5CESB, to be precise, which I run directly into my Universal Audio Apollo 8 interface. Doesn't matter, but that's just what we record these things into.
Nerd.
Yes, but I think the music producer folk out there would be like, okay, sweet interface, bro.
Absolutely.
And I do some slight equalization in post, but the signal is pretty much pure, and I'm really happy with how it sounded. And thank you to our friend Jenny Langevin for hooking me up with a little pro deal on that guitar. And also on Instagram, at boy named Goon, asked if we'd be covering Death to False Metal, and also Special Goodness, Pat Wilson's side project. The answer to both of those is yes. And
the answer is hell yes.
Hell yes. And he actually directed us towards, you know, what to kind of pay attention to with Special Goodness, because neither Chris nor I are all that familiar with that.
It's
work.
True. I'm not overly familiar with any of the side projects, so I think it's going to be that'll be a fun dive.
Yeah.
A true first impression.
Yeah, outside the rentals, I'm basically one big ignoramus.
Hey, well, it happens, you know, you can only spread yourself so thin. But over on our Twitterverse, Brad May, at Stupid Suck, sent a tweet when he saw that our Blue Album episode clocked in at an epic 3 hours and 19 minutes. Quote, oh my god, you guys did your own endgame. Amazing.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if it was like, amazing. Like, the fuck is wrong with you guys?
If I'm getting compared to the MCU, I'm a happy boy any day.
Sure.
Also on Twitter.
If I'm getting compared to MC Hammer, I'm a happy boy.
Any Hammer.
Any Hammer
any
at
hammer,
all.
Yep, ever.
Ball peen.
Yeah, you can go to the fucking True Value and get me any hammer off that wall. I'm going to be
anvils,
happy.
Anvils. Mallets. Sledge.
As I was saying before, I was so rudely interrupted.
I'm
also
sorry.
On Twitter, we received a tweet from The Morphoid concerning the tone of In the Garage, which we found thin and somewhat off-putting in our last episode, if you remember that discussion. And he told us, the reason the verse tones are different on In the Garage is because they had to work in a different room in the studio that day, and they did not have River's original rig. So they ended up using a Telecaster and a Fender Twin, plus an electro-harmonic graphic fuzz, which was also used for that fuzz bass. So, Morphoid, thank you so much for that shout-out and letting us into that little bit of insight, which is awesome. He also wanted to point out that another prominent 90s guitarist with similar sensibility, chops, and background as Rivers would be none other than Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins, which is so right on.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was saying to Chris before we started recording, when I was editing that episode and I heard me say that, you know, me from the day before say that about Say It Ain't So, what other 90s guitarist would play such a soaring solo, such a melodic solo? I was like, Billy Corgan, you fucking idiot.
You dumbass.
And I knew that a smart listener would point that out. And thank you to the Morphoid for doing just that.
Yeah, he's got a good ear, man. That's great.
Yeah. Back to emails. Richard Monham from the UK recently wrote us saying, awesome Pinkerton pod. Thank you. What I love about your series is that it has made me go back and listen to the albums and listen again with a new ear, if you know what I mean. We do indeed. It made my day when you mentioned Pat's drum fill in The Good Life. Love it. Oh. We're right there with you, my friend.
Absolutely, man.
Anyway, I've attached the song Kiss Your Lips by Allo Darlin, which quotes El Scorcho. You swung your feet and sang my face. killer song, by the way. I had never heard that band nor that song, and I think that sounds like a fine idea for a future episode. Songs by other artists that explicitly reference Weezer. So let's put it out there to our listeners. Can you all think of songs that make mention of the band? We'd love to kind of get a list going and maybe see if there's an episode there.
Richard also pointed out that the lovely song I Do is actually the last track on the UK version of Green and wondered if we'd be talking about it in a future episode. And yep, we sure will be. In fact, we'll be tackling all the B-sides and bonus tracks from the Green through Make Believe era in a future ep.
Speaking of future episodes, we've had many folks inquire as to our future plans for the show now that we've covered all the major records. BJ on Twitter and my old friend Pat Sharkey via email inquired if we'd be covering Songs from the Black Hole, the great lost successor to the Blue Album. Thanks for asking, fellas, and the answer is a definitive yes. In fact, I'm excited to dig into that one, because I must admit, I've never actually listened to the Songs from the Black Hole in order, and that, my friends, makes me a terrible Weezer fan.
Make that too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So that's got to be pretty soon on the list. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Definitely. So there has been talk about which band we could potentially cover once we're done talking about everything related to Weezer, right?
We may even find one on the show today.
Yeah, exactly. All these bands are going to be fantastic to talk about and deserve their own show. But that being said, emailer Derek says, you guys mentioned possibly doing other bands once the Weezer well runs dry. I think that you mentioned Guster a few times throughout the episodes and would love that. Quote, watch us discuss Gus? Question mark. Okay. Question marks on that one. Tough to rhyme Guster with anything. Agreed. Although Dan, our aforementioned Dan of Northern Ireland, actually suggested in a separate email that the ideal name for the show would be, quote, us discussing Guster ter yuz.
Us discussing Guster ter yuz.
Which is probably the front runner.
Yeah, I would say so at this
because
point.
We need a title that is impossible to search and find.
That's right. Yeah, we want it as alienating as humanly possible.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for all that wonderful insight and wonderful comments. You know, it's stuff like that that makes us know we're doing something right and lets us know that, you know, we got to keep going with this thing. And feel free to write us, weezetalkinweez@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. No apostrophes in there, just W-E-Z talking with no G, W-E-E-Z at Gmail. And then on Instagram and Twitter,
@weezetalkinweez. Same shit. Yes. We'll put it in the liner notes. We do this every time. Just like exactly like I said, hardest name to pronounce. Let's make it impossible to spell and impossible to say.
Absolutely.
But for those of you who have reached out, we really, really appreciate it.
And for those of you who left reviews on iTunes.
Oh, hey, thank you so much.
We remain a 5-star rated podcast even after getting more reviews and ratings. And the reviews are just so sweet.
So sincere and nice. So if you left us a review, we have read it and it means a lot. So thank you.
Yeah. And if you haven't, please do. We'll read it and it will mean a lot. Even if it's like, talk more Weezer. What was that episode where you guys talked about all things not Weezer?
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, we get that. Speaking of which, let's talk about all things not Weezer.
Whew. Here we go.
All right. Chris, did you have any criteria in deciding how to choose these bands?
Absolutely. So my first step was to literally go through my mental catalog and go through my old iTunes and everything that I listened to, basically middle school. Anything pre-middle school I kind of threw out because I was only either listening to older bands or...
It sucked.
And I will make mention of that later. So basically my job was to go through, decipher all the stuff. First of all, remember all the bands that I listened to, because there's a lot of stuff that I completely forgot that I actually listened to, and that kept happening. I would make my list and I'd be like, oh fuck those guys. And then make the list again and then do more research and then be like, fuck those guys. That I can't even tell you how many times that happened. But in terms of criteria, A, it's all about the music. I had to still love the music. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing. Did the music still speak to me? Because I listened to a lot of bands that I used to love and listened to it as like, it just doesn't grab me anymore.
I'm not there anymore.
And that's kind of like a Weezer tie-in, right? You still listen to Blue and Pinkerton. Doesn't matter. Like, I still love it.
Right.
Doesn't matter. That being said, I haven't sat with that band for so long. So to sit with these bands, I have a much deeper connection to a lot of these bands than I do Weezer. And that leads me to my next criteria. It had to be emotional to me. Like, I had to have a physical connection to the band. And that made a big difference.
You had to have fucked at least one of the members?
At least, typically, if it was a trio, one. But if it was more than a trio, at least 50% of the band.
Hopefully not just the typically.
You dirty boy.
Yeah.
So that's really what it came down to. Did I still love the music, and how does it make me feel when I listen to it? Do I have vivid memories of when I listened to that song. Like we've said in shows before, right? Like I know exactly where I was the first time I heard this. I know, or you do the same thing when you listen to that record.
Yeah.
So you associate it with that activity.
This is my this band. This exactly. is my this record.
And that was what I found in all five of my records. I have vivid memories every time I listen to any very specific records from specific bands, for sure.
And I'm sure a lot of our listeners can totally relate to that sensation.
Most humans should, I would hope.
I would hope so. Most humans I like do.
Yeah. You know what's so funny? I remember I dated this girl very briefly in college. I don't know why I thought about this, but we were driving in the car one day, and she would always just have the pop radio on, and I'd be like, oh, I don't know this
you
song.
You just sounded ancient, by the way. Ugh. The pop radio.
She had the pop radio on. You see, she had the radio on, see?
It was a good program.
Anyway, always the pop station. And I would ask her, oh, I don't know this track. Who is this artist? And she never knew the artist.
I don't know.
Never knew the artist. And I realized that music was, it wasn't even like really on her radar. It was just like a thing that existed. And I've never been able to relate to people like that.
Right.
It's such a hard pass when I learn that about your personality just like instantly. It's so bizarre. I don't know if that makes me sound like an asshole.
Yeah, no. It's the people who go, what do you like? Oh, whatever's on the radio.
Like, really?
That's the answer. It's like, oh, yeah.
It doesn't impact you this way? You know, everybody's got to have at least a band. I don't know.
Again, most people I like do, but that's not most people. I mean, meaning I don't like most people.
Shit.
You all right?
No, that was good.
Knock something loose there, Chris.
I like that.
For me, my criteria are very similar. The two main points, though, were in the past 25 years, who have I listened to the most?
Okay.
And who had the biggest impact on my own creative journey as a songwriter.
Oh, sure.
You know, yeah. Who influenced me the most.
Yeah, I think that's great criteria.
Really tough to quantify both of those, quite honestly. I mean, I guess I could look in iTunes stats, but frankly, like, you know how that goes now, Spotify. Like, it's just, it's really impossible to actually see it. But scanning through my record collection and playlists, there was definitely an upper tier of artists which rose above the rest, you know? Of course, I have copious honorable mentions, which we'll certainly get to as well. And of course, this is a program about Weezer. And as I said, we will be relating all of these artists one way or another back to the band we love so much.
As best we can.
And I am so excited to hear Chris's list. I think at the start here, though, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't list all of our favorite musicians from before May of 1994.
Absolutely. I made this list with the intention of thinking maybe one day we'll do an episode about that, but I don't think that's I think that's way less relevant.
It is less relevant. It'd be a little bit even more masturbatory than this, I think.
Oh, big time. This is pretty rough stuff.
Yeah. Like the way to maybe do that would actually be to listen to the bands that actually were huge influences on Rivers.
That would be a great episode.
Like, I had that idea, remember, to do Heart songs and actually talk about the songs mentioned in the song.
I think
Heart
that
songs.
Would be a great episode.
That may be a way to tackle music before Weezer.
Exactly.
That would be really cool.
That'd be really great.
But this is more of a personal list. So I made a list in descending chronological order.
Of course
you did.
Because
of course I did.
Of course you did.
Because, and the reason we're doing this too is, you know, obviously shed some light on our other influences, but also like, you may be thinking like, why aren't they talking about this band? And maybe you just don't know when their records came out, you
exactly.
know, because some of these, I had to look up a couple.
I had three specific bands where I was like, I don't know.
Damn,
I'm not sure. And I found out, and I even had one on my list because I was positive. And then I looked at it. I was like, fuck.
Right.
1 year.
Right.
That was so frustrating to have to kick out a band for 1 year.
I know.
But that's the
I know.
And
well,
that's the study.
And the first on my list is one of those bands, and it would absolutely be my top five. In fact, Mark Sutter on Twitter pointed it out, and he was like, loopholes, come on, like you got to name this band. Radiohead.
Very nice. Of course.
First record came out in February of 93, missing the cut by 15 months, and that's it. But they would absolutely be in the top five, most listened to, most influential, everything. They are one of the great bands to emerge from the 90s, and one of the great bands ever, in my opinion. And so that was the toughest one to leave off the list because it was so close.
Right.
You know?
No, I know the feeling.
Should I go through just...
Yeah, just name
through
them
the rest of it?
Just list them.
All right, continuing in descending order. Radiohead, Pavement, Beck, Modesky Martin and Wood, Yola Tango, Flaming Lips, surprise, surprise, because they were actually from the mid-80s. Fish, surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. It's funny that those are back to back to back.
Yeah.
They actually are. In the next one in order, R.E.M.
Of course.
Like the bands we talk about the most. I guess that was a sweet spot for me. And frankly, if you think about it, I was born in 1983. All those bands were born in roughly the same period.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of fascinating. I guess they're all my age. They're like
that's so cool.
Bands the elder.
Yeah.
And now we're into the 70s. Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen, Rush.
Yes.
Brian Eno.
Huh.
King Crimson, Neil Young, Pink Floyd, Towns Van Zandt, The Grateful Dead, Leonard Cohen, Steve Reich, The Beatles, and lastly, the luscious Bobby Dylan.
Oh, very nice. He's got to be.
You can hear when we got into the 60s, Neil Young, Pink Floyd, Towns Van Zandt, Grateful Dead, Leonard Cohen, The Beatles, luscious Bobby Dylan, Steve Reich in there, because as a modern classical composer, he had so much influence on me in his use of texture and whatnot. But like, that's kind of my sweet spot. It's kind of like mid-80s and 60s, that's which awesome. Is kind of funny. But most of those mid-80s bands, I kind of came to love from their 90s work.
Mm,
and in fact, when people have asked like in the past what certain bands of mine sound like, I almost always go, like the 60s and the 90s. Because that's kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's cool about the list that we'll be talking about today is like most of the music is actually post-millennial music, or at least the music I love from these artists are all from this century.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's an exciting thing because it's not just, I don't just like nostalgia.
Right.
I like music that's influenced by something nostalgic and familiar, but still modern bands do a lot for me.
Heck yeah. I couldn't agree more.
I'm excited to hear your list, Christopher. It's going to be very different than mine, I have a
hunch. It's going
to
be pretty different. I did not write mine in any order. both in terms
of favorites or chronology.
Nope. Well, I guess this would I'll go in descending order of favorites.
Okay.
But they're not organized by year.
Okay.
So I had number 12, Goldfinger.
That's a movie.
No.
No, that's a Shirley Bassey song.
Well, it's also banned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm here in my bedroom, and I'm not that familiar with...
You know it! They were one to just barely make the Get the Axe. Their first record dropped in 94 as well.
So
I had to... all right. Fair enough. Bad Religion, B-52s, Electric Light Orchestra, R.E.M., Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, The Who, AC/DC, Indigo Girls...
Of course.
Rage Against the Machine,
wow.
Sublime... and Boston.
All right. There you go. So Boston is your number one band?
Yep.
Is anything on your list that we're going to talk about close to that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
For sure.
Cool.
So no, I have a lot of stuff and I had to narrow it down from 14 groups.
Right.
For this with this criteria.
Oh, gotcha.
In the post 94, I had 14 groups that I wrote down.
Cool.
And narrowed it
down. So you had 9 honorable mentions. We will talk about our honorable mentions for our post blue list after we say our list, because we don't want to kind of eliminate anything.
No spoilers.
Right. Out of curiosity, was there anything on my all time list there, my pre 94 list, that surprised you, or were there any glaring omissions?
Not really. I'm surprised to hear you say that you don't like The Who as much.
Yeah.
They weren't really one of your guys.
No, I mean, I like 4 Who records, but I don't like roll that deep with them.
That's fair.
Like,
yeah, especially
you know what
with,
I mean?
With the discography of Fish
and weird,
Pink Floyd and Beatles. Like, you can't go
I know every
that.
Note of all those bands.
Exactly.
So it's a different thing. And I can't say that that's even true for all the bands on the list that I just said or all the bands I'll be talking about today, but the notes that I know I love so deeply.
True. Totally fair, man.
Yep. And for you, I guess...
I was going to say, nothing probably surprises you.
No, nothing surprises me.
You said when I said Rage Against the Machine.
Right. I just always forget.
That I like them?
That they exist. No.
Dude, no way.
I'm just joking. They're a cool band. They're a band, though, that weirdly, like, no, that doesn't even make sense. I was going to say, like, it feels more like a teenage band, but maybe it's just because I haven't loved them since I was a teenager.
That's fair.
You know?
Yeah. I definitely don't think they're a teenage band.
I know. And I know a lot of like my friends who still love them.
Yeah.
So
they were on this list until I realized that
that came out, right?
92. And yeah. I was livid.
Yeah. Cause
they were like in there, like towards the top.
Right.
And that shattered everything. I was like, well, turn this record off, put something else on.
Oh, that's funny. Well, let's get into our proper list. Okay. So I guess I'll get started so you can go last. So my number one band since Blue.
No. Well, haven't you ever seen MTV Countdown?
With Daisy Fuentes?
No, I only ever watched her on America's Funniest Home Videos.
Daisy Fuentes hosted that?
Pretty sure.
Wow. Would they count that down or would they do a count up?
Always a count down.
Or Count Chocula. What does that mean? What the hell does that mean?
I don't get that joke.
It's not. There's nothing to get. It's barely a joke.
Great.
I joke, but do you want me to start?
Start at 5.
Yes, okay.
You dummy.
Okay, hold on. Let me just shuffle my pages
in the right
order.
Reshuffle the scrolls.
All right.
Wait, real quick. Who has more notes, you or me?
We both have 7 pages, I believe.
All right, cool. Equals.
Yes, which I have to say is half as many as I usually have. So this
and
is
double
actually
for me.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. I think it's 7 times what Chris usually has.
Hey, man, I write my notes.
I was telling Chris that I was curious and I did a word count on my notes for Pinkerton and Blue. A word count, because we print out pages, you know, but it's like a note form. So it's not really representative of like, oh, I wrote this paper double spaced in paragraph form. So I was like, all right, word count. I know that 1,000 words is 4 pages.
More or less.
Like in academic writing. Sure. That's like 4 double spaced pages. I remember learning that in grad school. That's right. I went to grad school.
Toot your horn.
Toot your horn, horn. He didn't. He can't even say a cliche.
Fuck.
I was going to say let me finish because I went for a semester.
You had me at let me finish.
Please do. So, my Blue Album notes were 6,900 words.
That's too many words, man.
Hey, that's 3 hours and 90 minutes of podcast right there.
And I talked for some of it, too.
You sure did.
I talked for a little bit of it.
I think I did about 3 hours. Chris rounded up the 19.
Yep. That actually, it's sad but true.
Yeah. Just like my favorite Metallica song. Okay, so.
Didn't make the cut.
Nope. My number 5.
Drum roll, please.
Artist, since Blue, is a little band from Modesto, California called Granddaddy.
I'm sorry, who?
Exactly. This is going to be really fun because I have a hunch that Chris won't know half my list.
Okay, like, great.
Just to know them. Let me give you some background. And maybe even some of the listeners don't. This is not a super famous band or a super popular band, but obviously it's one of my favorites and was one of the easiest ones to tie to Weezer for reasons I'll talk about. So I first saw Granddaddy performing live in the studio on KCRW's Morning Becomes Eclectic back in 2003. For those of you who don't know, KCRW is a Santa Monica-based independent radio station, and this program of theirs introduced me to more music in the early 2000s than perhaps any other source. It's a great show. It still exists. It's totally check it out. All their live performances stream online. Like you can watch videos of all of them. And so I saw this band play. And when I watched that performance, I just said, this band checks so many boxes of what I love about music. Great melodies, interesting lyrics, psychedelic sonic textures, distorted guitars, vulnerable vocals, and at the core, just great songs. And it should come as no surprise that I love this band, as critics have compared them to Radiohead, The Flaming Lips, Elliott Smith, and yes, Weezer.
Hey, there you go. Checks every box.
Case in point, here's the song AM180 from their 1997 debut record, Under the Western Freeway. Pretty Weezery.
Dude, that's so Weezery.
Yes.
That's great.
Cool, yeah.
Man, I like that a lot.
Awesome.
Did you choose any of these song clips especially because you're like, I want to make sure Chris likes this? Probably not.
That's probably the only one that I think you could actually, that I know you would like.
Cool. Well, nailed it.
But we hear it right there. Crunchy guitars, 6/8.
Yep.
Right? Time signature, very Weezery.
A little swingy.
The synthesizers.
Man, I love it.
Cool, right?
Love the synth.
The drum wrinkle that they throw in there in that instrumental bridge, a little harmonic variation. This band is exclusively home recorded. It's basically the mastermind of one man named Jason Lytle. And most of the recordings are kind of just him. It's a 5-piece band, but he's the core of the studio element.
Sure, sure.
And I've seen this band live once. I actually saw them back in 2003, the day before I saw REM for the second time.
Wow.
Yep. Which was really cool. And I remember I went to both of those shows with Andy Hopkins, our friend Andy, and I looked at him after REM and I was like, I think Granddaddy was better. And he looked at me and he said, I agree.
Wow.
You know, we were just so blown away by the live show. It was really cool.
That's so important.
And to me, sonically, that song, and I will say production values for them got a lot better as they moved into the 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of sounds like a Rivers Alone recording.
In a way. Right?
It's as if, it's like this band sounds like if Weezer just released Rivers' solo versions of the songs and said, that's the record.
Mm.
Which I like because, you know me, I like more stripped down music.
Right.
You know, I like less polished stuff. I like stuff that's a little more ragged, but still adventurous sonically. Like, it's still textural.
And I think they nailed it.
Yeah.
They really got that going.
And in interviews, Jason Lytle, the singer and songwriter, he has declared both the Beatles and the Electric Light Orchestra to be his biggest influences.
Hey, saying, yes. Yeah.
He said, I'm completely in tune with ELO and Jeff Lynne. I know that guy like the back of my hand. And while half of Weezer seemingly didn't know what Mr. Blue Sky was before they recorded it for Teal, at least that's another kind of tie-in with the band.
For sure.
The pinnacle of the band's critical and commercial success came in the form of the software slump. Not the sophomore slump, the software slump. Yes, the software slump with like S-O-P-H-T-W-A-R-E. The software slump released in the year 2000. It's a great record with a great title.
Yeah,
and it's
nice.
About technology and humanity and is generally regarded as their OK Computer.
Nice.
Which is pretty nice company right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Personally, my favorite is 2003's Someday, S-U-M-Day.
Okay.
Like,
so they
mathematical
really like that.
Sum.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, the little wordplay there. That album just combines sunny pop, synthesizers, incredible wordplay, like you heard there, and vocal melodies, and it just makes for one of the best collections of playful yet sincere indie rock that I can recall. I would say any fan of Weezer's melodicism and tight arrangements, and simultaneously like backwards and forward-looking kind of sensibility in their songwriting and production would really love that record and really generally like this band. Unfortunately, though, this band broke up in 2006 before reforming for a new record, the way better than it had any right to be, Last Place, in March of 2017. But tragically, just 2 months after that release, and with big plans to tour and do more recording, their beloved bassist, Kevin Garcia, died suddenly of a massive stroke at age 41.
Ah, jeez.
He'd been in the band since he was 15. They used to rehearse in his parents' basement up until they hit a little bit more success after the software slump. He was really the centerpiece for that live band, and he would sing the high harmonies with Jason Lytle. He was just really central and a great spirit, and since then, they haven't made any plans to do any more music. They've kind of been quietly grieving his loss.
Sure.
And it was just a real tragedy and at a terrible time because that record was great and I was excited to see what else they were going to do. Jason Lytle, the frontman, does have a solo career, but I haven't even heard anything from him with regards to making new music. So, you know, be on the lookout. But thankfully, the music that does exist and his contribution to it, totally great music. And I highly recommend going down that road. My personal selection that I want to play for you all is a song called The Warming Sun off of Someday.
But in real life, we're in another world with another guy. He doesn't have to cheat, he never has to lie. And all that stuff I didn't get comes so easy to him. He doesn't even have to try. Do you ever ask yourself how it could have maybe been?
So you see, they're more of the dreamy psychedelic soundscape and use of synthesizers.
Yeah, big time. They sound, that's very Pink Floyd. I can see why you would like that.
That's the great thing too. It checks that Pink Floyd box while still sounding like 90s alternative rock.
Yeah, that literally is like Pink Floyd meets Flaming Lips. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna have to check those guys out.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely do.
That's funny. That is what I call or called my grandfather. Was Granddaddy.
Granddaddy, yeah. So that's a great band name, too. I think it's a really fun, playful band name, and it weirdly works for this band. Oh, and we should say, because I don't think we set this up, for each of these bands, we are choosing one song that relates to Weezer somehow, and one song that we just love and want to share with Chris and with you all listeners.
Heck yeah. That's the way it's going.
All right, so that's my number five. Christopher, what is your number five band since Blue?
My number five band. Local band for us. Local-ish, I should say. Out of the greater Boston area, a little band called Dispatch.
Oh!
Did you see that one coming?
No. I could not predict any of your bands.
Yeah, probably not.
The one band that I know, I can never remember their name.
We'll get to it.
Hot Rod Circuit?
That's it!
How do you know?
Hot Rod Circuit, my number one band. No, so I really fell in love with this band probably around 2010, and I was first introduced to them by a good buddy of mine and bandmate at the time. His name is Adam Hildebrandt, a great friend of mine. Shout out to Adam if he's ever listening to this. But he introduced me to the song The General, which is kind of like their big...
That's literally the only Dispatch song that I know.
Yep, it's their biggest hit. It's their probably their most approachable song for any sort of general audience. No pun intended. And so Adam and I were playing music together at the time, and he's a very talented guitarist and great singer, and he said, hey, for our upcoming gig, you should really learn the vocal harmonies for The General. And so I said, okay, sure. And I said I would only do it if he learned the vocal harmonies for Closer to Find by Indigo Girls.
So, I have one condition.
One condition. And I told him, I was like, no, that's good. Here's one for the playlist too, or for the set list rather. And so we both learned each other's songs, and from then on, I kind of dove into Dispatch's discography, first going through their second studio album, Bang Bang, and then eventually going through their first
comedy?
No, Silent Steeples.
No, comedy Bang Bang.
No, just Bang Bang.
Nice.
It's not funny at all.
Yeah, no, he's a serious guy. Chadwick Stokes.
That's the man, yeah. Stokes Ermstrom.
He's not stoked.
He's not stoked if you're being funny.
We'll see if the Stokes come up on this list.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, sorry, hold on, I had a typo. No, it's the Strokes, sorry.
You did type it, it's on the list.
Spoiler.
Yeah, that actually leads in. Chad Stokes, known for his vocals, guitar, bass, percussion.
And hair.
Yep. Pete Heimbold, known for vocals, bass, guitar, and Brad Corgan on vocals, drums, percussion, guitar, and harmonica. Like I said, I really dove deep into this band basically from 2010 to 2013, like 3 years straight of just listening to these guys all the time, particularly their first four records, the pre-hiatus era, because it's super, super awesome. I wrote tons of notes about their entire career and this and that, but we don't have to bore you with any of that stuff. Basically, they released four records between the years of 1996 and 2002, and all of them are just fantastic. All four records, really, just four bangers. And then they had this huge hiatus, put on a huge show, which actually spawned the documentary Last Dispatch, which I recommend all of you guys check out.
Was that the one at MSG?
No.
Okay.
That was actually the one at the Hat Shell in Back Bay in Boston. Yeah.
Okay.
So fun fact about that concert. They basically said, hey, we're going to get together. This is our final hurrah. This is our last concert, Last Dispatch.
Famous last words.
Yeah, right? Classic. You know, 10 years later, two records. Anyway, so they decided to put on the show. They were anticipating maximum 30,000 people to show up. Guess how many people showed up to the show?
31,000 people.
That's exactly right.
I knew it. Oh.
166,000 people.
What?
Showed up for this show at the Hat Shell in Boston. Crazy. People came from all over the world to see these guys. So that's kind of a really amazing thing about this group. Three dudes who all went to college in a tiny town in Vermont became this huge indie sensation. And the thing that's really, really cool about these guys is how they got their start musically. They started just jamming in college, and they were not signed to any record label. The coolest thing about this band is that their success came from A, word of mouth by playing live gigs, and B, Napster.
Oh,
peer-to-peer
right
sharing was huge for these guys in the beginning. And so we've talked about that in the past with, you know, how you got most of your music for Weezer via Napster. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a Weeze Talking Weeze tie-in, I guess. But these guys are really, really cool. Very jam-bandy, huge on the vocal melodies, amazing vocal harmonies, great lyrics. If you're a fan of just acoustic jam rock, this is kind of like the band. I chose both of my songs from their first two records just because those are, in my opinion, their two greatest. That's Silent Steeples and then Bang Bang. But yeah, I just really, really love these guys.
Kind of an example of their reach, by the way. I was at a remote waterfall in San Sebastian, Puerto Rico, and I was eating in a restaurant, like an outdoor restaurant, with Colleen and Sarah from Ra and Sarah's brother, and random music was playing, and this song came on, and all three of them started to sing along to this song, and I was like, I have no idea what this is, and I wasn't ashamed. I was like, who is this? Like, what? I can't, you know, can I not hear it that well? What is it? And they're like, oh, it's Dispatch. And I was like,
all of you guys know this?
I was like, one, how do you all know this? Two, I'm in the rainforest in Puerto Rico and Dispatch is playing. It just made no sense on any level. But I was like, yeah, this band really has a reach, you know?
They really do. It's kind of like, it's very similar to Weezer in that way, right? Their fan base is super, super tight.
What it reminds me of is Phish.
Totally.
Right? From Vermont drawing huge crowds for just them, passion fan base.
Yeah.
The internet being a big part of their success.
Totally. I can see the crossover 100%. I think the cool thing too is just they really are a jam band, these guys. You will never go to a show and see any one of them play one instrument the whole time. So everybody's basically...
That's weird. So they're all a cappella now. That's a cool choice.
Oh, I miss... Oh, I'm so stupid.
Oh, did I misunderstand?
No, I've spoke poorly.
No, I knew what you mean. They switch instruments a lot.
Yep. Yeah, basically every song they're popping
like
on.
Like Wolfpack. They do that now, right? Like, you know Wolfpack?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I think that's a thing. I mean, the bassist does his thing, but then like the guitarist plays drums. But I don't know a lot about Wolfpack. I assumed you did, actually, given your taste.
No, unfortunately not.
You'd really like him. Oh, one of the best bassists going.
Ooh, oh, great.
Baby.
I'm going to look that up. Wolfpack.
And no, I'm not German. It's actually with a V.
No, I like it. Sounds good.
So what do you want to play, Christopher?
So this is going to sound terrible. In my honest opinion, there's not a single song that this band could play that sounds anything like Weezer.
Okay.
So I chose the most easy listening song that they've ever released, The General, which is track 3 off of their 1997 record, Bang Bang.
There was a decorated general with a heart of gold that likened him to all the stories he told of past battles won and lost and legends of old. A seasoned veteran in his own time, on the battlefield he gained respectful fame with many medals of bravery and stripes to his name. He grew a beard as soon as he could to cover the scars on his face and always urged his men on. But on the eve of a great battle with the infantry and dream, the old general tossed in his sleep and wrestled with its meaning. He awoke from that night to tell what he had seen and walked slowly out of his tent. All the men held tall with their chests in the air, with the courage in their blood and a fire in their stare. And it was a gray morning and they all wondered how they would fare. So the old general told them to go home. He said, I have seen the others and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting. And I've seen their mothers and I will no other to follow me where I'm going. So take a shower and shine your shoes.
Well, that brought me back.
Yeah, right? It's kind of one of those throwback songs. That's kind of the one song. It's like, oh, that's that band. So,
right.
That's probably their most radio-friendly hit, I guess. I still really have a soft spot for that song. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
That's cool when, like, Weezer's like that, too. We're talking about how good Buddy Holly and Island of the Sun and stuff are as songs. You know,
yeah.
You go, I've heard this a million times, and I still love it.
Absolutely. Now, that song really doesn't get old for me, particularly just the story of it and the lyrics. I think his vocal performance on top of that really funky guitar line is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I really, really dig that a lot.
I think when that came out, I think by the time that came out, I was so not into stuff like that.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? That it never personally appealed to me.
It's so college rock.
Yeah.
It's so just like, I'm chilling. I'm hanging out. I'm smoking a doob.
Right.
And I'm sitting on the quad and I'm listening to Dispatch.
And much like I think the music of Fish, or I'll say this, the fan community of Fish gives people a kind of ill and sour taste about what the band is. And
yeah,
it almost has nothing to do with the band in a way, because like the guys in the band aren't like that.
Right.
Like, I picture white-hatted kind of preppy frat boys with, you know, Yamaha acoustics playing that song and trying to sing it in harmony on quads across America.
Absolutely.
Or at least across the Northeast. And I go, I'm not that into that. You know, I'm a musician and I'm not necessarily into that scene.
For sure.
So that's probably part of the association too, and maybe why I've never really listened to them. I have listened to some State Radio, which is, of course, Chadwick Stokes' other band.
Right.
And I think that stuff's pretty groovy. It is
really cool.
I've really heard more of that.
Yeah, totally. They have a huge following as well.
Yeah.
Both of them, everyone, you know, Stokes heads.
Well, it's all you can hear on the radio, you know, because they control it.
Yep, that's the way.
Yeah. Your personal, Chris.
My personal track is the fourth track off of their debut record, Silent Steeples. A little something called Hey Hey.
Hear a tie-in to Weezer there in a way.
The vocal harmonies.
Vocal arranging.
And I really, really, that's one of my favorite parts about them is the fact that all three dudes can sing relatively well and their voices are kind of different, but they blend really nicely, and I really like it.
How are they at singing live?
They sound great.
Have you seen them live?
Never.
Oh,
only
no!
Oh, I know. I've only... Ah. So this is one of two of the five that I have not seen live.
Oh, man.
And they're like the live band.
I know, is, right? You kind of got to see them.
The thing that's crazy, because they're a Boston band, whenever they do like reunion tours, they play like 2 to 3 shows in Boston, sell out.
I know.
Every time, within days. They have that crazy cult following. So one of these days, they played at Bold Point Park last summer.
How did you not go to that? You were working?
I was working.
Oh,
and I was so mad.
That would have been great.
And I remember there was a girl who was working the lunch shift, and I came in to bartend at night, and she goes, "Hey, I'm headed to the Dispatch show." I was like, "Oh,
ouch.
Have fun."
Yeah, definitely. You got to get to one of those shows. Are they still actively touring? Or are they kind of like,
yeah,
okay,
cool. They just wrapped up a tour of their last record, and I'm sure they'll be doing another one soon.
Awesome.
Because now they're releasing records. They did their post hiatus record was American Location 12, and they just released Location 13.
Oh, okay.
So Location 14 is bound to be on its way.
Bound to be. They're just locating it right now.
Yeah.
And another tie into Weezer there, by the way, chord progression 1-5-6-4.
Yeah, it's kind of the meat and potatoes.
It is.
For sure. They're not the most, I think they're really cool and creative with their vocal harmonies and whatnot, but in terms of like chord progressions, songs do lack a little bit, and that's kind of why it's lower on the list, but I really do have I remember the first time I heard it. I remember the first time I wanted to buy the record, and I have a lot of college days listening to this college band, so it kind of has a special place in my heart.
Cool. All right, my man. Well, that was nice. I was glad that I knew of the existence of that band at the very least, even if I only knew that one song. Okay. My number four band, Elbow.
Granddaddy, now Elbow.
These are some bad band names.
How many
obscure-ass
bands are we going to talk about?
Okay, so that's interesting. This is probably the second most obscure band on my list, but they're obscure in the States. They are actually huge in England.
Yes, they
are a Manchester, England based band. They formed in Bury, England, which is in the greater Manchester area, back in 1997. Actually, the singer of this band, Guy Garvey, just amazing voice, one of my favorite vocalists, kind of shades of Peter Gabriel, who's a big influence on him. The band Talk Talk was a big influence on him, but he was kind of schoolmates with the other four guys in the band, and Losing My Religion came on the radio when they were all in school, and he was kind of improvising a harmony to REM's Losing My Religion, and that's when they were like, dude, yeah, you got to sing with us.
That's awesome.
And they were making very different music than how they ended up. So they're a band that released their first record in 2001.
Mm.
They are a band that I would just simply describe as stately.
Stately.
They make mature music for adults.
Okay.
Patient, thoughtful, well-arranged, amazingly well-produced and well-sung music with thoughtful lyrics, with specific references and a lot of heart. They're a super sincere band, but I don't think they're maudlin or emo or anything. They just kind of like, again, sing about mature themes for mature people. Not necessarily adults. I'm saying, like, I was like 17 or 18 when I first heard this band, and I was like, this speaks to me so much.
Because you're a very mature man.
I'd like to think so. So I was actually recommended this record by my first serious girlfriend, Megan, who listened to the show. So hello, Megan, and thank you for turning me on to Elbow.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You had me. Thank you for turning me on. Oh, I'm so sorry. Of course, she's actually now married to Matt Ferrara.
Who
will be on the show soon. So, I've got nothing but love for both of them, and I'm glad that we're still in each other's lives, and I'm really glad that she had good taste in music and turned me on to this fantastic band.
Elbow. Tell us about them.
Yes. So, they had their big breakthrough record on 2008's The Seldom Seen Kid, which actually won the Mercury Prize that year, an accomplishment which the band's singer, Guy Garvey, called quite literally the best thing that ever happened to us. Mercury Prize is basically like the Grammy Award. It's given to the best record made by any artist from the UK or Ireland in a given year.
Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of bands, like Radiohead, has never won a Mercury Prize. They've been nominated like 5 or 6 times and have never won, but Elbow won for their album, The Seldom Seen Kid. That's not my favorite of their records, though. I think it's great. I personally love their debut, Asleep in the Back. I love the record Leaders of the Free World, off of which I'm going to play 2 songs. And most recently, they released a record called Little Fictions in 2017 that I think is just immaculate. I think it's great. I finally saw them for the first time on that tour in 2017. I went to Terminal 5 in New York City to see the show. And that was truly one of the best shows I've ever seen. One, I'd been listening to the band at that point for 17 years, 16, 17 years. And to finally get that release of hearing these songs live, and they were just such a kind of like a tight live band and a lot of humanity and charm and kind of the in the banter and the way he interacted with the crowd. That's probably a 3,000 person venue. It was sold out. Like, they're not nobody, but again, they're just not big here.
Sure.
They had a huge hit though in England called One Day Like This, which you would maybe know to hear it. I'm not going to play it here because it's just, I think it's a fine song, but you know, listen to it on Spotify if you want, One Day Like This, and maybe you'll be like, oh, I've heard that in the background of things. Great strings and stuff. It's kind of almost like a bittersweet symphony by The Verve, but like in 2008, you know? Let's see, what else to say? The band consists of the singer, Guy Garvey. Great singer. One of my favorite singers. And one of my favorite singers to sing along to. My voice sounds nothing like his, but I love singing with him. You know, like certain artists that
you just know.
Crank it up.
It clicks.
Yeah, and like the range is exactly mine
as
well.
That's the best.
Oh, yeah.
Best feeling ever.
Definitely. And also in kind of a theme for my list, two brothers, Mark and Craig Potter, who play guitar and keys respectively in the band, and the brother Craig is also the producer of the band. He records everything at their home studio, another kind of trend for these artists, and he gets such a great sound. I mean, he really knows how to engineer, and the band just collectively knows how to arrange so well. The bassist, Pete Turner, is an understated but very melodic and selective bassist.
He just
kind of knows how to pick his spots. And so just kind of like the collective maturity of their arranging and musicianship always appeals to me. It's like a great template band when I'm arranging a song, particularly when I'm finally making it in the studio, when I'm really making those selections of when do I want this to happen? How many times? You know, that's a great idea, but I need to do it half as much. Those kinds of things.
Sure.
That's what I think of when I think of this band. So between Guy Garvey's magnificent singing and the band's virtuosic minimalism, this band serves as a perfect example of how to make mature, earnest music for thoughtful humans. Case in point, my personal selection, Great Expectations, off of 2005's Leaders of the Free World. This song also happens to be the singer's favorite song by the band.
A call girl with yesterday, eyes was our witness and priest. Stuck for support, his club kindly supplied us a choir.
That's really nice.
That's cool, right?
That's very, very nice. Is most of their music that way?
It's tough to generalize with them.
Sure.
Because there's times when they have electronic elements in their band. There's times when they have fully symphonic elements in the band. There's times when they have crunchy guitars, but not like an alternative rock way.
Right, right.
You know, but
selectively.
Selectively. And weirdly, like bluesily used.
Oh, cool.
You know, it's kind of an interesting thing. So the weird thing with Elbow is the music I love by them, I love more than most music ever.
Wow.
The music I don't like, I go like, yeah, I'll never have to hear that song again. It's a really weird dichotomy. It's
either
I love it or I don't hate it, but I go, nah, that ain't for me.
Huh, you know? You
but most of their stuff is like channeling that spirit at the very least.
That's really, really great. I'm going to listen to that ASAP.
Oh,
two,
cool.
Two hits for me.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's great.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, what I think of when I, you know, kind of hearing that out of the context of the record is it kind of sounds like pre-Dark Side Pink Floyd when they're like pastoral and acoustic. Like if you think of Metal by Pink Floyd, like their record that came out right before Dark Side, like there's a song in there called Pillow of the Winds or A Pillow of Winds. Yeah, that's right. That like that kind of guitar playing reminds me of, and you hear in the voice there, just like a really skilled vocalist.
What's the vocalist's name? The front
Guy man? Garvey.
Guy Garvey.
Guy Garvey.
Love his voice.
Oh my,
such a cool voice.
So cool. Like yeah, he like channels Peter Gabriel a little bit, but like it's his own
thing.
At
first, it's like deep and raspy. And then all of a sudden, he's got pipes.
Yeah, all of a sudden, he's up in his falsetto range.
Amazing.
Yeah. And actually, when Peter Gabriel... What's that?
Just really love it.
Yeah. And when Peter Gabriel did a covers record about 10, 12 years ago called Scratch My Back, where he covers other artists, he actually covered an Elbow song. And the idea was that he would cover a song by each of these artists, and they would cover one of his. And that was called And I'll Scratch Yours. So that they did a really great version of... Mercy Street, which is one of my favorite Peter Gabriel songs. It's on the album So, which is the album with like Sledgehammer and In Your Eyes and all those big time, like his big most ones. Successful record. But that's like kind of like a haunting track on the back half of that record that is just so good. And their version is killer.
Love it.
Let me point out a thing about the lyrics to that song. In it, Garvey describes a scene on a late night bus in which he realizes how much he loves his girlfriend and imagines their wedding happening right there in that very moment with a call girl with yesterday eyes. Great. Words there, serving as priest, and his lover's smile alone serving as her vow. It's just a beautiful scene, just beautiful imagery, and it's otherworldly, but uses very plain language. Like, literally in the next verse, he sings, blinking and stoned, rain in your hair, you only smoke because it's something to share. Like,
wow.
That's just, you know, nothing more than two syllables in there, but the sentiment is said in a way that I've never heard before, you know?
It's true.
I don't know. So, like, just that thoughtfulness to everything about their music is, like, I have chills now thinking about this song. Like, I love it that much. It's absolutely one of my favorite songs of the last 20 years.
That's awesome.
Now for my Weezer-related pick. Like I said, it's not necessarily in this band's DNA to rock, but I decided to choose the title track of the record in question, Leaders of the Free World, which is an anti-Bush screed from the days of Operation Iraqi Freedom. It's worth, I used to think that these days, you know, back in the mid-2000s were like the worst and most dystopian political times of my life. Little did I know. Anyway, while this band does not rock out, this one like legitimately pounds. Distorted bass, heavy drums, and just gnarly, biting lyrics. But that said, it doesn't really sound like Weezer. However, it does achieve something that Weezer does when they're at their best. Elements introduced over the course of the song come together at the end in a coda that serves as an almost Beethoven-esque recapitulation. So we have this vocal melody. In this gnarly guitar solo. And then a new vocal melody, which by the final minute are all being performed at the same time to beautiful results. Yeah, that's how you arrange a song right there.
That's fat.
That's pretty fat.
Yeah.
With an F and a PH. All Both. Of them.
All of the above.
Yeah. So that's like them rocking out. And you hear it's not like rock.
No, not rock.
But it's heavy.
Bluesy. Heavy and bluesy.
Yes.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Cool, man. I'm
really,
glad you
really
like
that. That's awesome. Two great selections so far.
That's a band that like I know more people would like if they just heard it.
Seriously.
But where would you hear that? You know what I mean? Yeah, obviously, if that's from 2005.
Never heard of Elbow.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of my favorite. Well, actually, honestly, the weenus is one of my favorite body parts. But, it, you know, it's
totally.
Elbow of Jace.
Exactly. It's about as close as you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't exist without.
Yeah, 180 degrees polar op.
All right. So 180 degrees polar op. All right. Well, let's. I have a feeling your number four will be 180 degrees polar up from that choice.
It could not be more so.
Oh, baby.
So I already chose a relatively, in as far as indie bands go, I chose one of the most popular.
Even think of them as they are independent musicians, but not indie, if that makes sense.
Exactly. So my next band is another pretty well-known band, very, very loyal following, small but strong, the Chicago-based punk rock and melodic hardcore band Rise Against.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Love these guys. It's funny enough because I guess these guys would almost be like, I don't really know how to describe it. I think melodic hardcore or new metal in a way is kind of accurate. And I really do not like much of the music from this genre at all. But these guys really, really stand out to me for a few reasons. One, I was big into Green Day at the time that I heard of Rise Against, so I was super politically active, or as politically active as a 12 and 13-year-old could be. You know, I would go to marches and whatnot and be like, yeah, fuck Bush. And my parents were the same way. Whatever. We've already talked about that. But This is also not the only band that's a politically active band.
You've
already talked about Rage Against the Machine, talked about Rise Against, and there's another one in the future.
Right. We just heard an anti-Bush screed right there.
Exactly. So the thing that truly sets these guys apart, in my opinion, I wrote melodic, melodic, melodic. Mm-hmm. They are very, very heavy, and I am never one to shy away from heavy music. I love hard rock. I love fast drums. I just love rock and roll. That's always what I've loved. And these guys are the ones who are encapsulating that heavy mentality, and yet they're saying something that, in my opinion, matters, and yet they're incredibly melodic the whole time, whether it be through a bassline melody or just a really awesome rocking guitar hook or the vocal melody or a harmonized vocal melody. They do it all. They find a way to incorporate something that you can sing along with, whether it's a singer or an instrument. And so that's like a huge, huge turn on for me. So if you're going to combine something awesome that I can sing along to, that's not just one, like, you know, one flat line, like a lot of punk singers. Like, I think of the band NOFX. I love that band, but he's a shit singer.
Right, he has no affect.
Well said. So this is a group that, through their vocal melodies and just everything that they do, it just really, really turns me on. I first started listening to these guys back in, like, late middle school, early high school. So to make you feel old, Chris, that's about 2007-ish.
Right when I was graduating from college.
Yep, exactly. My buddies were really into these guys, and they gave me a copy of the 2004 record Siren Song of the Counterculture, which I was immediately drawn into for the Faust tempo, pounding drums, heavy riffs, and yet incredibly melodic and catchy hooks. I vividly remember listening to their 2008 record Appeal to Reason, which I would listen to when I would mow my ginormous lawn in Alpharetta, Georgia. So for basically 2 years straight, all I did was listen to that one record. And
nice.
So that's like one of those things I was talking about.
Do you like smell like, cut grass when you listen
I
to
do.
It?
Yeah. I really, really do. And it's just a heavy, heavy rock album, so it gets you amped up and you push the lawnmower faster because you're more excited to do that.
Sure. Putting that John Deere to work.
Yeah. And then funny enough, I listened to the record that came out before that, The Sufferer and the Witness. I would listen to that every day when I lived in Narragansett, and I would ride my bike to URI.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like an 8-mile bike ride. So yeah. I would listen to that album like twice a day for a couple years. Just because it's that fast pace. It's really, really good for exercising just because like it's always like the same BPM. My one beef with this band.
Where's the beef?
The beef is right here, Christopher. While they're very, very melodic and do a good job of coming up with new melodies, the tempos are very steadfast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of that same just like driving rock. That being said, they do have some really, really cool ballads, and most of their ballads, like any hardcore band, is like those are the songs that got popular, right?
Do they, like, so I don't even know the song to hear it, but they have the song about the swing.
Yeah, Swing
okay.
Life Away.
That's the only song by them I'm aware of, but I could not. I don't know if I've ever heard it, but I'm aware of it.
There you go. Yeah, and that's like one of their slow acoustic songs. They usually put one or two on every record. That's kind of what been their mainstay.
Yeah, it's like a heavy band template.
It is. Yeah, you got to have one slow song. It's got to be the most emo because everything else they're talking about is emo. But as soon as you slow it down, everyone listens. However, I would say 90%. Of everything they make is that same tempo, that same beat that just brings you back and back, and that's why it's so great for working out, right? So because of that, the drumming is amazing. Their drummer has incredible chops. He's awesome, but it's the same beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that same just kind of punk beat, so I get very fatigued listening to the drum beats, and it has been said that a lot of their music really sounds the same,
mm-hmm.
right? And I could totally see that. If you're not listening to these records day in, day out, I could see it totally being very, very fatigued of similarity. But if you really dive down and if you like this style of music or you really like this band, I think you can see the differences within these.
I'm excited to hear something.
Absolutely. Why don't I go ahead and play you the song I chose to relate to Weezer fans. This is track 8 off of their 2008 album, Appeal to Reason, called Audience of One.
I can still remember the words of what they meant.
So as you can hear, even from like the intro, that kind of melodic guitar line.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of good stuff there. And
another 1-5-6-4.
Yep. I love that chord progression.
I like that.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's not too bad.
No, it's not bad at all.
Cool.
I it's funny because we talked about Laura Jane Grace, right?
Yes.
On our Black Elm episode.
Yep.
And I could never keep those two bands straight. Against Me and Rise Against.
Right?
It's just the Against.
They're in the same.
I knew Rage Against.
Right. I was going to say, you got Rage Against, you got Rise Against, you got Against Me.
Yeah. I'm against all the Against bands, I guess.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Mr. Bell's here.
Yeah, finally a Weezer tie-in. Oh, I do have a Weezer tie-in for these guys. These guys' first two records were produced by Geffen. So,
oh, there you go.
That's all I got.
Label mates.
Yep.
For at least two records. That's cool. Yeah. No, that's more melodic than I expected it to be.
Exactly. And that's the majority of their music.
Oh, okay.
That was a
halftime thing too. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
they kind of broke it down. Exactly.
Like the verses are halftime. I was expecting it to go up, and you heard it go up there at the end.
Right.
You know, to the double time. But yeah, I was expecting it to all be in that mode from your description. So no, that was good and very melodic. And hearing a song like that, I could see why a song like Put Me Back Together would appeal to you so much. Right?
Yeah.
It's like same chord progression, same kind of like, it fits the same compartment of rock music.
It really does.
Yeah. And honestly, it affected me. Like I was listening to that like, oh man, I dig this.
Good.
In the same way that it's like, it kind of goes, doesn't go against my better judgment, but like elementally, I don't quite get each thing on its own doesn't really do much, but the overall impact is like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. The frontman, Tim McGillrath, he really does do a great.
Tim McGillrath? What an insane name.
I know. Every time I read it on paper, I'm like,
is that a hyphenate?
Is that how it works? No, it's Mick, McCllrath. McGillrath.
Wow.
Yeah. Funny enough, half the members of this band are vegetarian, and they're constantly advocating for PETA.
And
that was kind of their thing. Like, Tim was
completely... So they eat a lot of bread, you're saying?
Exactly. Tons of bread.
PETA bread.
Wraps, pockets, lots of Middle Eastern food.
Sure.
No, they're huge PETA and animal rights activists, and Tim is completely straight edge.
Mm.
He's never done alcohol.
He didn't break his edge?
Done alcohol. He's never drank alcohol, done drugs.
Never smoked alcohol. Never drank drugs.
No, never snorted marijuana.
Yeah. All the wrong verbs.
Exactly. So that's kind of cool to think that like a hardcore, it's even hard for me to say hardcore band, but for a heavy rock band in this genre to be totally straight edge and such a powerful advocate, I think that's awesome. They're definitely not alone in this genre in terms of political activism and all that kind of stuff and speaking out and all that. I mean, I got to see just recently, I saw these guys with AFI and Anti-Flag.
Wow.
So I was like,
those are other two bands I always confuse, by the way, funnily enough. AFI and Anti-Flag.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the
those
AF.
Those two? Oh.
Not music. I don't know their music at all.
Right.
Yeah, oh, I know that AFI means a fire inside.
Isn't that funny?
Pete Cameron loves AFI, by the way.
Oh, man. Yeah, Tita and him need to talk about that. Because, yeah, funny enough, I've never seen Tita more into a concert ever. She knew every...
Even Weezer?
She knew, wait. She knew every word that Tim sang. In the Rise Against set.
For real.
She knew every word that... I don't even know the lead singer of AFI. She's a huge AFI fan. And then she knew every word that Anti-Flag sang. She literally knew everything from every band. She was flipping out. It was awesome because I love all three bands, but not like that.
Right.
Like I love Rise Against and I could sing every word and every nuance, but those two, to see her geek out over a full set by three bands was really lucky
perfect.
For her. She was like, this is the best show I've ever seen.
I bet that
was at the Palladium in Worcester 2 years ago.
Oh,
was
man.
Awesome. It was great.
Did you get your ass kicked or were you in the balcony?
No, I took a step back. I will talk about a show that I got my ass kicked in the same venue.
Nah.
I'll talk about
it. It's a
soon
rough
enough.
Venue.
Dude, people in Worcester are mean.
Can I tell you though, I've seen three shows at the Worcester Palladium.
Okay.
Each one great in completely different ways. Okay. I think the first thing I saw there was Dashboard Confessional.
Wow.
But the opener, it was a four-band bill. The Anniversary played, a British band called Seafood, and an artist named Ben Queller played. Ben Queller is a great indie singer-songwriter. He actually used to cover Sweater Song, weirdly enough. And
oh, wow.
When he played, I had never heard his music. I had never heard of him. He was just on the bill. Frankly, I was only going because my girlfriend at the time, Megan, the aforementioned was into it, and I was like, cool, yeah, let's go. Later that year, I saw Dashboard open for Weezer, funnily enough. But this year, 2002.
Twice in 1 year?
Yes, at the Palladium. And when I saw that guy, Ben Queller, I was like, holy shit, there's people making music like this? He was that fucking good and dynamic and catchy and rocking. So that was at the Palladium. The next day, I went and bought one of his records. I bought my second Pavement record, and my love of indie rock, which we're hearing on my list and will continue hearing on my list, like, was birthed out of that moment at the Palladium.
No way. Wow.
Yes. The next year, I saw Jimmy Eat World.
Very nice.
And then in August of 2002, I saw none other than Bob Dylan.
At the Palladium?
At the fucking Palladium.
How did you...
All right. I showed up with no ticket, and I bought from a scalper and was, you know, eight heads back the whole night.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't that crazy? My brother had real tickets, and so I met him up there, just got in line with him, and just kept an ear open for tickets, and boom. It was general admission. This is a small room. I mean, this is probably a 1,200-seat theater, 800.
Pretty max, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's small.
It's not that
big. And it's generally a heavy venue.
Very intimate.
Yeah, and the reason that Dylan was playing was the very next day, he was making his return to the Newport Folk Festival for the first time since he went electric in 65 and was booed off stage. So this was summer 2002. And Bill Bartholomew, our dear friend and podcaster of Bartholomew Town, he was actually at the Newport show, which I did not go to, but I went to the Palladium show, and I literally left there saying, great, I never have to see Bob Dylan again, and I have not seen him since.
Yep, I saw him once, right about that same era, and I never, ever need to see him.
Well, I'm saying for the experience, that like I was like, you know, 10 feet away from him as he sings Tangled Up in Blue and standing in the doorway and all these great, some of my favorite songs ever by anyone.
And this was what year, 2002?
2002.
Okay, I did not see him back then.
Right.
But wow. Yeah, did he still sound good?
No, he sounded like Dylan. One of the funny things is, his voice is gone, and it's been gone for a long time. And what's funny is his phrasing. He's always experimented with phrasing, like all through the years. And some of his live performances from the mid-60s and the mid-70s and some of his official bootleg releases are just like a masterclass in how to rephrase your songs in a pleasing way. But what he does now is he'll be playing a song, and you'll be, you know, he'll start singing, and you don't know what it is. And you hear, "There's some way out of here. The joke of the thing. There's so much confusion. And I'm like turning to a friend and going like,
is this Watchtower?
What the fuck? Like, but you just, the phrasing is so, just the way he's parsing out the language. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. And there's actually Norm Macdonald, the comedian, told a story once about seeing Dylan in L.A. And Ringo Starr was in the audience, and Norm was there. And like halfway through the set or something, like Bob on stage kind of agitated, just started saying, Ringo. And no one knew what he was talking about. Like, they didn't know that Ringo. He's like, Ringo's out there. And he goes, oh, hi, Bob. You know? And he goes, what do you want to hear? And Ringo goes, Tangled Up in Blue. And Bob goes, we already played that.
Wow.
Even Ringo
didn't even know.
And of course, Bob Dylan famously smoked up the Beatles for the first time back in 1964 in a hotel room in New York.
Wow.
Yep. He thought that they were stoners because he misunderstood "I want to hold your hand" as, instead it's of like saying "I can't hide," he thought it was "I get high." And he's like, "You guys smoke, right? Like your song, you say I get high."
And they're like, "No."
Yeah, but they were like, "All right, fine, we'll get high," and that changed their lives.
That changed their entire musical trajectory
ever.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. But yeah, the Worcester Palladium, awesome venue, great, great memories.
It really is. Good stories now, good stories later to come.
They hold up.
Absolutely. So before we get into track two, my personal favorite from this band, I just want to go over real quick reasons why I love this band. Heavy distorted lead guitars, beautiful melodies, hooks all the time, driving powerful drumming, great politically derived lyrics, and I love Tim McGillrath's voice and his ability to perform these lyrics with a little bit of rasp and everything. So without further ado, one of my absolute personal favorite tracks from the band, Re-Education Through Labor, off the same album, Appeal to Reason.
To the sound of a heartbeat pounding away.
That kind of kicks.
That pounds.
Dude, I love that song.
Yeah, that...
It's just like, that's my ultimate amp up song.
Nice.
If I have to like psych myself up, sometimes I'll put this song in earbuds before I do a rock climb outside because I'm just like, this is like my psych up song.
Yeah.
Or if I have to like pick up something really heavy, if I just have to like try really hard, this is like my try hard song.
Nice. Yeah, hearing that, I'm like, man, I should listen to more music like this, you know? Because I like almost always enjoy it, but I never find myself reaching for it.
Sure.
And frankly, I don't really know where to reach. So that's why something like this is kind of cool.
Cool. Well, I'm actually really surprised to hear you say that you dig it. So that's awesome.
I do. I like this much better than Dispatch. You'd probably be surprised to hear that, but I really like this more than Dispatch.
Cool. I do too.
Yeah, obviously. You like it one more than Dispatch.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a tough choice between 4 and 3, but we'll get into that later. But yeah, that's Rise Against for you.
All right. That's awesome. You, it's my turn, so of course we're going to mellow out a little bit.
Let's mellow it. Let's chill it.
But
I'm about to go, it doesn't get any lighter from here for me.
Okay, great. That's good. I mean, we need that contrast. That's
actually
excellent.
I lied, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, that's okay. We need that contrast sometimes. All right, so my number three band. One of the most successful and well-known indie rock bands of this, you know, millennium.
So I'm going to probably know these guys?
I'm not...
By name, anyway?
I'm not convinced of that. Probably by name. Hopefully
okay.
By name. But maybe not even. That just shows, you know, indie rock is still indie rock, you know?
Heck yeah.
So I would think, like, the most successful indie rock bands, you know, like Arcade Fire, The Shins, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
this
definitely.
Is kind of just that next tier down, but they can play, you know, certain size arenas. I saw this band, and I'll say who they are in a second, at, like, Forest Hills Stadium in Queens.
Nice.
2 summers ago, which is probably, like, a 11,000 to 13,000 seat, you know, former tennis stadium.
That's a lot.
Like, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers had played there just earlier that summer on their last tour.
They're kind of big.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that size venue they could sell out, at least in their native New York.
Okay. You're killing me. You're killing me. Who is it?
Little band called The National.
Oh, cool. Very cool. I was expecting something different, but that's awesome.
What were you expecting?
Of Monsters and Men.
Oh, interesting. I actively don't like them. But that's a rare band, but that's a band that actually, on a personal level, I quite like because they did an interview with us at Newport in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is the smartest, most charming band. Like, how do these Swedes have a better, or Norwegians or whatever they are, I think Swedes, have a better grasp of like our language than most Americans do?
Yeah, because we're fucking idiots.
But I don't really like their music. But I agree, that's way more successful. At least that one song is way more successful than the National ever were. But so the National, from Cincinnati, Ohio, via Brooklyn, New York, formed in 1999 and comprised of 2 more sets of brothers, Brian and Scott Devendorf in the rhythm section, and twins Aaron and Bryce Desner on guitars.
Devendorf.
Yes.
That's a great name.
Great, right? That sounds like aristocratic, doesn't it?
I remember when I was in orchestra, we once played a piece by...
Carl Orff?
The last name of the composer was Diddlesdorf.
Oh my God.
And every time we would pull it out, he would say, all right, turn to the Diddlesdorf. I would go, Diddlesdorf!
Yeah, it is one of those names.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure. The quintet is rounded out by the rich baritone of singer Matt Berninger. So I recall first hearing them back in 2007 playing on a roommate's turntable back when I lived in Brooklyn. And I have to say, it didn't really do much for me. They were always on my radar from that point forward, but I was like, yeah, all right, it's the band with the guy with the deep voice, whatever. But I came to love their sonic textures, their arrangements, their drumming, their lyrical themes, the vocals in general, and the invaluable consistency of quality that they produce. Every record they've made, literally since 2005, they've proven incapable of making a bad record. Like, every record is of quality, if not great.
That's incredible.
And that's a good run. And they're
yeah.
Honestly, what's funny is, as of the time you're hearing this, last Friday they released a new record. However, we're recording this Thursday night, so I haven't heard their new record yet.
Oh my God.
So I can't really talk about it. But just know that there is another new National record, and the advanced stuff I've heard from it sounds like another kind of step forward for the band.
Heck yeah.
Coincidentally, that 2007 record, Boxer, which is the first one I heard but didn't do much for me, is now like one of my absolute favorite records of the millennium. It's a tremendous record. But of course, I love it so much that somehow neither of the songs I'm going to play for you guys are from that record. Go figure. In fact, both of my selections come from 2010's High Violet, which is the first record I heard and loved, and that just cemented my fandom of the National. And I must say, this is the hardest band yet to relate to Weezer, as they don't generally rock, and when they do, as in Able and Mr. November off of 2005's Alligator, it's in a much different way than Weezer does. The vocals get a little bit more gruff, and the chords are just more open and less chuggy, and
yeah.
They just don't sound like Weezer. So let me get first to my tenuously related Weezer track and get it out of the way. The song in question is Blood Buzz Ohio. What a great title, right? Blood Buzz Ohio.
That'd be a great band name, yep. Let alone track list.
I know, really great band name. And I chose it first because of its awesome drum part. In a completely different manner than Mr. Wilson, Mr. Devendorf is the stealth MVP of like many of my favorite national tracks. He's such a detail-oriented player that he literally charts out all of his parts on manuscript paper as he develops them, which is like, name a rock drummer who does that. You know, he's like literally like, no, it's got to be this, no, hi-hat here. Like, he's writing drum charts. And also, this drummer shockingly looks like late 60s John Lennon. Beard, glasses, longer hair. Like, wow. You look at him, you go like, is that Lennon on drums? Is that the ghost of Lennon?
Yes, I never died.
Yeah, it's like Mike Hanford's character, exactly. John Lennon, on who, when I saw Comedy Bang Bang live, this is a recurring guest on Comedy Bang Bang, played by Mike Hanford, the comedian. And when I saw Bang Bang live most recently in New York, he opened as John Lennon.
Oh, beautiful.
And did a set of stand-up as John Lennon in a white suit with a fake
Holy
beard.
Christ.
Oh, it was great. We
That's
were
incredible.
Dying. So this song, Blood Buzz Ohio, there's a harmonic tie-in to Weezer as well, which is the Nationals' use of the 1, 6, and 4 of the key, which is a chord progression that Weezer uses prominently in songs like I Don't Want to Let You Go, If You're Wondering If I Want You To, and even Across the Sea to some degree. So let's hear a bit of Blood Buzz Ohio by the Nationals.
To Ohio in a swarm of bees. I never married, but Ohio don't remember me. I still owe money to the money, to the money I owe. I never thought about love. When I thought about home, I still owe money to the money, to the money I owe. The flows are falling out from everybody I know. I'm on a blood buzz. Yes, I am. I'm on a
blood. I'm on a blood buzz.
Dude, you're 3 for 3, man.
Oh, good.
I love all this.
That's cool.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned, it's like, I need to listen to more music like this. I just don't listen to music like this.
Right.
And I love all three of these bands you play for.
Oh,
so
that's
far.
Awesome. That's a relief. I really wasn't sure. I mean, I didn't think you'd hate them because you're a thoughtful fan of music. And you'd be I see what there's quality here, but I would never listen to this. It's great to hear like,
no,
oh, this is cool.
So far, like 5 songs.
Wow.
You've played.
That's cool,
and
man.
I would continue to listen.
Cool. I love this song. This was the first, I heard this in advance, like on NPR's All Songs Considered before this record came out. And I was just like, oh, I got to listen to the National. You know, like it
hooked me. So what was your path to the group?
Hearing that day. I mean, they were on my radar, but again, I just never owned any. And then hearing this song on that NPR All Songs Considered, the day this record came out, I was like, I'm downloading that from Amazon or whatever. And fell in love with it. Became my record that period of my life.
For sure.
And then every subsequent record, they released one in 2013, which is called Trouble Will Find Me, which is basically just as good as this. And then a bit of a departure in 2017, an album called Sleep Well Beast, which I love just as much, if not more. It's a little bit more sonically ambitious, more electronic elements. Bryce and Aaron Desner, who are great producers in their own right. In fact, I kind of like passingly talked about them when we talked about Mumford and Son.
Oh, okay.
One of them, Aaron or Bryce, I forget who, quite honestly, produced their record.
Right, the more electronic one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
that's called.
Yeah, close enough. I stopped listening to them after that.
And another cool thing with this band is those brothers and their drummer actually curated a really cool compilation of Dead covers done by indie artists and even some like classic rock artists called The Day of the Dead. It's a 59-song collection, and they were kind of like the house band, you know, they and other indie people, and like just covering Grateful Dead songs, and all for charity. And it's like a great, if you like want a gateway into the music of the Dead, you're like, I don't dig that, and you're like, where do I even start? Like, if you just put on The Day of the Dead and just put it on shuffle, or like look for artists that you like, I mean, Yola Tango's on there, like Grizzly Bear, Bonnie Prince Billy, like all, like even like Bruce Hornsby, who we talked about on the show, who used to collaborate with the Dead, he does a great version of Black Muddy River on there. But like, it sounds so good. They get such a great tone. Like, all their shit sounds so good. Like, basically everything from 2007 on just sounds like exactly
sonically
like music
exactly
I'd
want
to make.
What you want.
Yes, because it's just warm. Like, the vocals are warm. The drums are warm. All those textures, these kind of pads that are happening. You know, occasionally there's guitar stabs that you'll hear there. And
there's a lot of bridge pickup going on.
Yeah, a real lot of... No, neck pickup.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's like one big neck pickup setting. That's right.
That's good.
Okay, so...
No, it's so funny you mentioned when you play that song, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense now. Because this is what so much of your music sounds like. Your music.
My music. Huge influence.
I can see it.
Yeah. And more texturally than even songwriting. The funny thing is with The National is that like their chord progressions are very basic. If I were to like break them down the way I do with Weezer songs, there wouldn't be much there. But it's the way that they explore the corners of those chord progressions, the way they arpeggiate them on the guitar, and the way that they kind of have a lot of like, there's like strings and horns happening there. They're like part of the atmosphere more than they are like tangible, you know, notes.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's huge. And there's like a weird amount of like harmonies and stuff, like all happening. But at the forefront is that Matt Berninger's baritone, that voice.
His voice is amazing.
It's cool, right?
Really cool. It's very similar to Elbow. What was that guy's name?
Yeah. Guy Garvey.
Guy Garvey.
Yeah.
Can't remember. Great name. I know. I should really remember that. That's a very memorable name.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So here's my personal selection. Same record, a couple songs prior. It's a song called Little Faith. I mean, I just love this song, and I could have chosen, you know, 25 songs from National and been just as happy. I chose this song because it shows the melodic sensibility of the singer. Over the course of this, like, you know, 4.5 minute song, there's just so many different melodies that he introduces. And like, you hear a voice like that and you don't think melody immediately. You know what I mean? Because the range is limited. And actually, he stopped smoking around the time of 2013's Trouble Will Find Me, and his range expanded. Like, he's actually like singing differently now and higher. And maybe I should have played a song from there. But like, even within this limited range, he's doing a lot of different melodic work.
Lila and Southern Soul, head for the coast. Lila and Southern Soul, everything.
Radiohead much?
Yeah, right?
Man, yeah. The big tie-ins, I could tell that Radiohead's a huge influence for them.
Yeah, I would think so.
For sure. Man, yeah, you knew every little nuance to that song.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff. Some complex little just fills and things happening underneath such a simple melody and harmony.
Yeah.
You know?
They're the other band that they're like, to, you know, the American this or the British that. Like, these guys in Elbow, I think, actually share a lot of common DNA in their arrangement sensibility. And just the stateliness of their sound. Yeah. You know, this is mature music. You can't just like hear this in the background or something and be like, whoa, what's that?
Right.
You got to kind of like high quality headphones and, you know, really like get inside it.
For sure.
But it's super melodic.
Big time.
And intriguing. Like, I don't know what he's singing about a lot of the time, at least on this record. He's actually gotten a lot more like clear and domesticated and emotional in his songwriting, but still in his own way. And I've grown to really admire his lyricism. But it's not why I listen to the band. I really love their melodies, their chord progressions, and their sound.
Yeah.
And boy, that drummer.
Dude.
Killer.
Whoa.
And also great bass playing on this by Scott Devendorf, his brother.
Devendorf. Bro.
Devendorf duo attack.
Hollering at you. That's some incredible rhythm work.
Yeah.
That rhythm section is next.
There's a cool live version of that, actually, from like they played in like an old castle or like this mansion in like upstate New York, and they filmed it for Pitchfork, actually. And I think that's the first time I saw this song. at the very least, I've watched that performance a lot. Maybe I'll link to it in our show notes in case you guys are curious of, like, one, watching John Lennon play killer drums in a band, but two, kind of like just seeing the song unfold. And I think they have horns playing with them and
oh,
stuff.
That's
just
the best.
Because there's horns there. Like, you can hear, like, in that space between the rhythm section and the voice is this kind of resonance.
Yeah.
And that's like horns and strings and like a kind of sustained guitar. And
I love horns.
Yeah.
I'm a hornsy man.
He's hornsy.
All the time hornsy.
Join Chris and Chris next week as they complete their top five bands since Blue.
Hey, thanks, MC Metacritic. We'll see you next Friday.